The 13th Candle by Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 3. Ha ha ha! The room rattled to the gusty guffaw, the young man sitting, hunched up, with his back to the laughter, jerked as though he had been shot. "Hey, Jess," snorted the voice, "have you read this?" Mr. Justin Town carefully covered the portable organ which he had been so lovingly fondling, and stood up. "Read what?" he inquired crossly. Mr. Dennis Dollywaga smiled broadly as he waved a book above his head. "Oh, boy," he exclaimed. "This guy thinks that all of us homos are sick. He thinks we have glandular troubles. He thinks we're all mixed up between men and women. Ha, ha, ha." Justin strolled across the room and took the book from his friend. It came open at page 99, where, overfolding in an ecstasy of hilarity, had cracked the spine binding. Dennis peered over his friend's shoulder and extended a long pointed finger to indicate a certain passage. "There," he said. "It starts there. Read it out, Jess. The guy must be a real square John." He moved to a low settee and reclined limply upon it, with one arm thrown carelessly across the back. Justin polished the lens of his spectacles, replaced them upon his nose, and tucking his handkerchief back in his sleeve, picked up the book and read. In the hurly-burly of getting from the astral world to that world we call Earth, mix-ups occur. Being born is a traumatic experience. It's a most violent affair, and a very delicate mechanism can easily become deranged. For example, a baby is about to be born, and throughout the pregnancy, the mother has been rather careless about what she was eating and what she was doing. So the baby has not received what one might term a balanced chemical input. The baby may be short of a chemical, and so development of certain glands may have been halted. Let us say the baby was going to come as a girl, but through lack of certain chemicals, the baby is actually born a boy. A boy with the inclinations of a girl. The parents might realize that they've got a sissified little wretch and put it down to overindulgence or something, and they may try to beat some sense into him on one end or the other to make him more manly, but it doesn't work. If the glands are wrong, never mind what sort of attachments are stuck on in front. The boy is still a girl in a boy's body. At puberty, the boy may not develop satisfactorily, or again, he may to all outward appearances. At school, he may well appear to be one of the limp-wristed fraternity, but the poor fellow can't help that. When he reaches man's estate, he finds he cannot do the things that come naturally. Instead, he runs after boys and men. Of course he does, because all his desires are the desires of a woman. The psyche itself is female, but through an unfortunate set of circumstances, the female has been supplied with male equipment. It might not be much use, but it is still there. The male then becomes what used to be called a pansy and has homosexual tendencies. The more the psyche is female, the stronger will be the homosexual tendencies. If a woman has a male psyche, then she will not be interested in men, but will be interested in women, because her psyche, which is closer to the over-self than is the physical body, is relaying confusing messages to the over-self, and the over-self sends back a sort of command, "Get busy, do your stuff." The poor, wretched male psyche is a man, and so all the interest is centered on a female. So you get the spectacle of a female making love to a female, and that's what we call lesbian, because of a certain island off of Greece where that used to be the done thing. It is quite useless to condemn homosexuals. They are not villains. Instead, they should be classed as sick people, people who have glandular troubles. And if medicine and doctors had the brains they were born with, then they would do something about that glandular defect. After my own experiences of late, I am even more convinced that Western doctors are a crummy lot of kooks just out to make a fast buck. My own experiences have been, unmentionably and objectively, deplorable. However, we're not discussing me now, we're discussing homosexuals. If a lesbian woman or a homosexual male can find a sympathetic doctor, then glandular extracts can be given, which certainly improve the condition a lot and make life bearable. But unfortunately, nowadays, with the present breed of doctors who seem to be out to make money only, well, you have to search a long way to get a good doctor. But it is useless to condemn a homosexual. It's not his fault or her fault. They are very, very unhappy people because they're confused. They don't know what has happened to them, and they can't help what is, after all, the strongest impulse to man or woman, the reproduction impulse. Head shrinkers, alias psychologists, are not much help really, because they take years to do what the average person would do in a few days. If it is clearly explained to the homosexuals that they have a glandular imbalance, then they can usually adjust. Anyhow, the laws are being amended to cater for such cases instead of subjecting them to such fierce persecution and imprisonment for what is truly an illness. There are various ways of helping such people. The first is that a very understanding and much older person who has deep sympathy with the sufferer should explain precisely what has happened. The second is the same as the first, but with the addition that the victim should be given some medicament which suppresses the sexual urge, the sexual drive. The third, well, again, matters should be explained, and a qualified doctor can give hormones or testosterone injections, which can definitely help the body in the matter of sexual adjustment. The vital thing is that one should never, never condemn a homosexual. It's not his fault. He's being penalized for something he hasn't done. He's being penalized for some fault of nature. Perhaps his mother had the wrong sort of food. Perhaps the mother and the child were chemically incompatible. However, whichever way you look at it, homosexuals can only be helped by true understanding and sympathy, and possibly with the judicious administration of drugs. "What is that book?" asked Justin as he finished reading. Flipping shut the cover, he read out, "Lobsang Rampa, Feeding the Flame." "He should feed the flame if he attacks us," he commented sourly. "What do you think of it, eh, Jess?" asked Dennis hesitantly. "Do you think there's anything in it, or is he just a guy drumming up hatred against us? What do you think, eh, Jess?" Justin carefully smoothed his top lip where the mustache would not grow and replied in a somewhat high voice, "Well, isn't this fellow an ex-monk or something? He probably doesn't know the difference between a man and a woman anyhow." They sat together upon the settee, flicking through the pages of the book. "Lots of other things he writes here make good sense, though," mused Justin Town. "How come, then, that he's so wrong about us?" interposed Dennis Dollywaga. Then a positively brilliant thought struck him. He beamed like the newly risen sun and smiled. "Why don't you write him, Jess, and tell him he's all wet? Wait a minute, does he give an address in the book?" "No." "Then I guess he will get it care of the publisher. Let's just do it, Jess, eh?" So it came to pass that in the fullness of time, as they say in the best circles, author Rampa received a letter from a gentleman who insisted that author Rampa did not know the first thing about homosexuals. Author Rampa duly considered the dire warnings about his sanity, perceptions, etc., etc., and wrote an invitation to his correspondent. "Admittedly, I know little of any sexual activities," said the author, "but I still maintain the accuracy of my remarks. However," the letter continued, "you write me your opinion of homosexuality, and if my publisher has strong nerves and a good heart, he will permit me to print your letter or article in my 13th book." Two heads came together. Four eyes scanned the letter which had just been. "Gee," breathed Dennis Dollywaga in astonishment. "The old guy has passed the ball back to us. Now what'll we do?" Justin Town sucked in his breath and his stomach. "Do? Why, you will write a reply. That's what you'll do. You started this." For some time, there was silence between them. Then both went off to see what would have been their work, but really was a session of cerebration on the boss's time. The hands of the clock crawled slowly around the dial. At last it was time to leave work and return to the pad. Dennis was first home, soon followed by Justin. "Jess," muttered Dennis as he chewed the last of the hamburger, "Jess, you're the brains of this outfit. I'm the brawn. How's about you writing some stuff?" "Gee, I've been thinking about it all day, and I haven't scratched out a thing." So Justin sat down with the typewriter and knocked out a reply. Dennis read it through carefully. "Wonderful," he gusted. "How about that?" Carefully, they folded the several pages, and Dennis strolled out to the mailbox. Canada's Postal Service would never set a record for speed, what with strikes and sit-ins, slowdowns and work-to-rules, but before mildew actually formed on the paper, author Rampa had the package dropped through his letterbox along with 69 other letters that day. At last he came to that particular package. Slitting open the envelope, he drew out the pages and read. He said at last, if can be construed as saying. Well, I'll print the whole lot, letter and article, because then people will have the whole thing straight from the horse's mouth. Later, author Rampa returned to a rereading of the letter and article. Turning to Miss Cleopatra, the Siamese, he remarked, well, Clee, in my opinion, this absolutely justifies what I wrote before. What do you think? But Miss Cleopatra had other things, such as food, on her mind, so the author just put the letter and the article ready for the publisher, and here it is for you to read. Dear Dr. Rampa, I have broken a rule of mine, so to speak, by enclosing an unfinished piece of work. By that I mean that it is the first writing off the top of my head. It's not what I wanted to say exactly, but for some reason it seems important that I get it off to you. When you see that I cannot spell and know little of English grammar, you may just throw it away in disgust, and I wouldn't blame you, and I would not be angry. It does not always say well what I was trying to get across, and if I thought I would have time, I would edit and rewrite it over and over until it was as good as I could make it, but perhaps it will be of some use, even the way it is. Some of the things I wanted very much to say were, most homos are not the little pansies you see on the street. They're not the ones the psychiatrists and doctors write about, because those are the emotionally disturbed ones. Being an adventurer, I have worked in cities, farms, some rodeo work, etc., etc., and I know homos in all fields who are as normal as blueberry pie, so to speak. So they can be very masculine. They can think and act like men, and do not think and act like women, or have any of the feminine characteristics which so many heterosexuals seem to think they do. I wanted to stress to the homo what an important part he could play in this world if he'd get off his behind and quit feeling sorry for himself. I don't believe in things like this gay liberation thing, where, like all youngsters today think, they have to make a big issue of it, but merely go along and do one's own job well with the tools they have, being their own talents, etc. I tried to point out, too, that in my own case, I came from a very good, normal home. No hang-ups to make me emotionally disturbed, and that really no one knows or suspects me of being gay unless I want to tell them. I am not ashamed of it in the least. I just don't feel that it's their business, any more than if I'm a Democrat or a Republican or a Christian or a Hottentot. I know, too, that I'm luckier than many people, because all people immediately want to pour out their hearts to me, and I have thus learned so much, so very much, about people's feelings. But anyway, just for the record, you may use any or all of this article that you might want to. You may edit or change or correct or delete it to your heart's content. or if you can junk it because it's not worth using, I will not be hurt. If you want a name, you can use Justin. And if you should need to refer me to anyone with an honest inquiry either, for or opposed, I wouldn't mind writing them. But I do not have a private box number, so I'd rather have an opportunity to write them first. It always seems that through no fault of my own, that through predestination, people would suddenly meet me, and it was like I was meant to be there to help. But now I am helping a lot of people, but not my own kind, so to speak. Well, I guess that's about it. I would like, someday, to write a book of my life, as would thousands of others, because it seems to stimulate many people to try harder, but perhaps when I'm older. Right now I'm very busy building a business, a home, and doing lots of fun things like gardening, for example. We have a little place in the country with lots of wildlife and much work. I wish you were able to visit. You'd like it, I think. I hope all is going better for you and your projects. Sincerely, Justin. Everyone will agree that the characteristics of each individual from every other individual are as varied as the stars in the sky or the pebbles on the beach. It is agreed, I think, that this is what makes the world what it is, what makes great men and small men, causes nations to rise and fall, and what attracts or repels one person to another. For the sake of clarity, let us agree that the word characteristics implies all individual traits and moods, strengths and weaknesses, faults and gifts, and generally the sum total of what makes each individual different from all other individuals. Some of these characteristics come with us at birth, either because we've developed them in previous lives, or because we've chosen them as needs to help us in this life to become a more complete person. So, also, some of these characteristics have been developed during this lifetime. Societies, at various times and in various places, consider different characteristics to be good or bad, an asset or a detriment, or just too common to be considered, depending upon the particular views and needs of that particular society. But let us not deal with particular societies, but work on the teachings of all great religions, that being that each man comes to earth expressly to learn and experience certain things, that he comes to earth deliberately choosing those characteristics which he alone needs to develop himself. This, then, causes us to look at all men with greater understanding, more tolerance, and makes a statement, "Judge not, lest you be judged," far more significant. This is not to say that man's life is entirely predestined, for his free will exceeds the power of his birthright. Individual characteristics, and thus he may choose to use or misuse this birthright at will. Of the many characteristics possessed by man, those of an emotional nature usually seem to be the strongest. They include, in part, his likes and dislikes, his wants and his loves, etc. Of these, his loves, or that emotional involvement which is brought on by his loves or hates, and those around him, play an extremely important part in his development in all other phases of his growth. For example, a man may love his chosen work to such an extent that all other experiences in life are put aside. He may love his family to such an extent that he will sacrifice his own development to assure them of their wants and needs. By the same token, a man might hate to such an extent as to expend all his energies to eliminating that which he hates, forgetting entirely all that he was meant to do. Now, this is particularly true in his loves and hates of another individual, and when these emotional characteristics are joined by the most damaging of all, that of fear, all havoc can take place, reasoning can be lost, and a complete breakdown can occur. For example, a suitor suddenly discovers his lady fair has another suitor who seems to be winning the battle. His love for her suddenly becomes even more intense. His fear of losing her magnifies his dislike for his competitor, and if he allows himself, he might even forget his battle to win his love and concentrate solely on eliminating his foe by slander or trickery and many other more drastic methods. Or he may brood and expend all his energies in feeling sorry for himself, but not without turning his fears and hates secretly against his foe. But this again takes all his energies, so that quite often his work will suffer, his health, his happiness, and generally all his growth will suffer. These, then, love and fear and their counterparts, hate and understanding, for no man can fear that which he entirely understands, are the strongest characteristics in man. Never are these stronger than in religious beliefs, political beliefs, and in one's personal loves, cultures, governments, cities and towns, and small groups are all swayed and governed by their attitudes towards these predominant characteristics. Let us consider that which is very close and important to almost every human being, his individual love for another individual and its effect on others. Love is blind. Or, there's no accounting for taste in love, and love conquers all. These are all very valid statements. John and Mary fall in love, and marry against their family's wishes. In a lifetime of misery and antagonism can be created for every member of both families. But let us not be concerned with individuals, but with the universal and more dramatic difference. Let us take the difference between the heterosexual and the homosexual. The heterosexual, male or female, is born into a world which seems to operate out of a sheer need in a heterosexual manner. It's quite obvious that this is the normal pattern for procreation. Thus, the heterosexual cannot fathom the reasoning of a homosexual. Some feel the homosexual is a degenerate, a lustful person who cannot control his or her desires. Others think they are sick, etc. There have been hundreds of books written on the subject, and most by psychiatrists who think they, the homosexual, should have their heads shrunk or by medical doctors who feel their plumbing should be changed, or medical aids should be applied to change them. And a few books have been written by homosexuals who are trying desperately to defend themselves and make something out of their sometimes unhappy lives. Unfortunately, because feelings run high among the majority of uninformed heterosexuals, there can be no list of who's who in the homosexual world. But for anyone informed, it's a very long list. Like all groups of people, we can subdivide them and categorize the homosexuals into three main groups. One group are those, as described in Feeding the Flame, that being those who by accident in birth became as they are. The second are those who, because after birth, have strong emotional problems and turn to homosexuality to solve or ease those problems. It is these groups that the doctors and psychiatrists write about. Those two groups are very small in proportion to the third and most important group. This group are those individuals who could not possibly learn all that they must learn without being homosexuals. In other words, they chose to come to this earth in this life as homosexual. Before we get into that, let us first be aware of the fact that there are millions of homosexuals in the world, men and women. Some of the world's finest have been homosexuals. But the average person has no idea that so many of their friends and heroes and leaders are not of the same thinking that they are. In certain cities in the West, the percentage is as high as 10%. Some surveys report even higher. In rural areas, the percentage seems smaller, usually because the young homosexual girl or boy must find their own kind, and since everyone knows all about everyone in a small community, it takes a lot for a person to remain in hostile country. The average person feels that they can spot a homosexual any time or any place, but this is not true. Even among homosexuals, this is not true. There are thousands of happily married men and women with very fine children who are homosexuals and who may or may not actively act out, as the psychiatrists like to say. It is also false that a homosexual cannot make love to the opposite sex. There are, of course, always a few exceptions to every rule. But the homosexual does not have sex with the opposite sex usually because there is no attraction, there's no interest, they feel more like brothers and sisters towards the opposite sex, or just as friends. You will find few homosexuals who have not had sex with the opposite sex because in growing up they go through great hell, accepting the fact that they chose to be what they are. So they feel it necessary to at least prove to themselves that they could be, if they wanted to, and also to prove that they are right, in that physically it might be fun, but without that emotional rightness. It is a wrong and a waste of time, just as it's a waste of time to play football if you don't like football. Many homosexuals are very sensitive people, and they usually have a strong sense of morality and will not hop from bed to bed except when young, and that applies to the heterosexual world also. They have an eternal search for a permanent lover. Once found, their lives are no different from the heterosexual. Why would anyone choose to be born a homosexual? Because, unlike any other group, certain things can be learned. If one chose to be born black in an all-white country, or white in an all-black community, one could learn how it feels to be in a minority group, and learn things and feel things, etc., that he could not as one of the masses in that group. So also the homosexuals, except that the homosexual has a whole different set of problems to solve. For example, he can be put in jail just for being himself in some places. He can lose his job, he can be run out of town, he can be subjected to a whole lot of very uncomfortable scenes by a very unenlightened heterosexual world. The unenlightened heterosexual world feels they are just, because to them, this person is going against the laws of man and God. But let me state here, very definitely, that, one, if it were God's will that he be such, how can it be against his will? And two, contrary to the belief of most, no man can be made a homosexual if he isn't one, any more than any man can be made a heterosexual if he isn't one. True, any man or woman can try anything. They might even participate for a short period of time. Witness the hustler and the prostitutes who will do anything for money. But these are not what we're talking about. No mother or father need ever fear that their son or daughter is suddenly going to be made into something else. I have lived a long time, and my life is that of a homosexual, and I have spent a large part of that life working with the young on this very problem, but more of that later. But never have I seen a happy conversion or a permanent one from one to the other. If the magic which attracts one human being to another isn't there, no one can make it appear. If you could, there would be almost no homosexuals in this world, because the hell they go through in growing up is so intense that they would offer anything to make that magic appear. But there is a much happier side to all of this, for the homosexual can learn and develop and accomplish things he could not possibly learn otherwise. For the average homosexual who once accepts himself in the right light, the greatest gift he receives is understanding. He has developed through his own life experiences a very strong sensitivity to the feelings of others. He or she usually has a very strong moral sense because of the monumental soul-searching needed to accept oneself under these conditions. He is able to do a great deal of good in this world because he has learned the need for discretion, the need for the truth, the need for an alert mind, the ability to psych out people quickly and accurately, and to be able to assess a situation immediately. After all, his whole life has depended on this ability. Thus, great leaders, Warriors, businessmen, doctors, and every field on this earth has been aided by gifts of the homosexual. The homosexual is usually given a great artistic and aesthetic gift or ability, in which case they become writers, musicians, artists. They usually are sympathetic people with a strong love of people as a whole. Plus, they are great comforters. Consequently, with all these assets, plus the fact that they are, if they wish to be, undetectable, they can travel through this world as can everyone else, doing much, much good, unimpeded, as would perhaps a man born with a physical defect or a mental defect be, which might cause people to shun him. Thus, if the homosexual will, he can make many, many points for himself in his development. For the record, the crime rate amongst homosexuals is very, very low. They are tolerant and not prone to physical violence. It is extremely rare to hear of rapes in the homosexual world. Seduction, perhaps, but even then it is rare in relation to the heterosexual world, primarily because the homosexual has a great need to love and be loved, and this cannot be found in rape or unwilling seduction. All in all, the homosexual is not that villainous lecher that so many uninformed heterosexuals believe him to be. So often it's just that they cannot fathom why anyone could love someone of their own sex. But look at it this way. In some incarnations, it's necessary to be born a woman to learn certain things. The next time, one might be born a male. Thus it is the person that counts, not the physical body that they occupy. Granted, all the physical senses may ordinarily attract opposite sexes in this world, so that the population doesn't come to a screeching halt. But by the same token, we are usually attracted to people who are a complement to our personality, and whom we feel are going to help us along the path of life, and someone who we can help along that path. So does the homosexual. Perhaps if I briefly tell you a little about myself, you can more readily appreciate this view. Born in a small California town of ideal parents, we were quite poor, it's true, but an amazing mother and staunch Christian never allowed us to think or feel poor. We were rich and very lucky. After all, who else, when it rained, could sail sailboats down their living room floor while their mother read them exciting sea stories? Who else had parents who could go out of an evening with their rifles and in the matter of an hour bring home fresh rabbit instead of having to eat ordinary store-bought meat? We were lucky children, the three of us, and happy. Raised in a mission school, my mother's fondest wish was for one of us to join a religious order. By the time I was 5, I knew that my brother and I had different ideas on the value of girls. Within the next couple of years, I knew that nothing was more attractive and pleasurable than being in the company of boys or men. I would marvel at the physical beauty of the male, and I made it a point, even at that age, to boy watch, and that meant being one of them. I mean to participate in their activities and join in with them. But always, I knew that my reason for liking them was different than their reason for liking me. To them, I was just one of the guys. To me, they were something very special, but I wasn't quite sure why. I could understand the girls drooling over them, but I felt sorry for the girls, because they could never be a boy like me and be one of them at the same time. I never ever wanted to be a girl. Naturally, as youngsters, we experimented with our toys once we learned there was more to them than originally met the eye. Again, I knew I was different because of how I felt about it. And even then, I was always shocked to learn that to the other boys, the experiments meant nothing. Because to me, it was as spiritual as church. This bothered me, because the dear holy nuns in the church taught that all of this was very bad indeed. And I offered up masses and prayers, candy, work, and all sorts of things, begging to be made like everyone else. Not because I wanted to, but so many people told me I was wrong. Not in so many words, mind you, but I knew I couldn't dare tell them how I really felt. I had always been a listener, so I could understand them better, and I knew. At 13, I was accepted into a monastery where I hoped to please my mother by being a monk. However, I knew it wasn't right and left after a year and a half. I was then on my own because my family let me know they couldn't support me. This was the Depression. This meant I did not have to go to school unless I wanted to because I had to work. And of course, being a normal, healthy boy, I didn't want to go to school. I'd never been very good at it anyway. Off to the big city to make my fortune. For a while I was going to be a sailor and sail the seven seas. I even stowed away on a tanker, but common sense or fear made me get off before the ship sailed. And then, for a while, I was going to Arizona to fight Indians and bad men. I loved horses and had a way with them, so I'd be good in a posse. But the thought of chasing men whom I might like put me off that venture. Being venturesome, I was constantly on the move, looking for a special friend and new discoveries. By the time I was 16, I had learned 3 very important things. First, everyone, men, women, and children, were attracted to me in every way. In addition, everyone trusted me and confided in me, and I was a listening post and a comforter for almost everyone I met. This led me into almost every walk of life. My friends, some of them still, were wealthy, poor, crooks, and priests. Secondly, I learned I was homosexual. I tried to force myself into a homosexual life, sexually, but it always seemed unclean, whereas with my own kind, it was something just as spiritual and good as could be asked for. Thirdly, I learned how fortunate and what a great obligation to others I had, because I was strong, sure, normal, adventuresome, and I was needed. But this posed a serious problem. It posed obligations which I was not ready for. Obligations to people's feelings. I learned that I, like everyone else, could hurt people very much if I wasn't careful. I found, too, that many boys my own age, more or less, were fighting being homosexual so hard they were getting all mixed up, some turning to crime to prove themselves men, some giving up and acting like girls, others sinking into their own black pits. I knew that somehow I could help them. The only way I knew was to make friends with as many people as I could find and let them ask for help. Having an affinity for slums, I spent a great deal of time in the pool halls and hangouts. But I needed, too, the stability of the more affluent, so I also spent time uptown. My work went towards photography and the arts for a living, although whatever job came along was exciting, particularly if I'd never tried it before. The war came and I joined the Navy. After my discharge, I worked for youth camps and reform schools, but this did not have the same effect as when, by accident, I would meet someone who really needed me. Let me also say that there were more heterosexuals than homosexuals in my life, and I never let them know my feelings, not because I was ashamed of them, but many would lose their confidence in me because they wouldn't understand. By the early 50s, I was 30, and for a long time had thought that it was time to do my own thing. This meant going to school, and as I had no high school, I decided to go to Europe where I could learn what I wanted without going to high school first, and then being obliged to take all the other courses our colleges make one take, which are alien to their chosen profession. I saved up $400 and headed for Europe. Spending almost 10 years there, I found there were many people there needed me as a friend, even though I was not a good linguist. Arriving back home in the early 60s, I found myself living in the middle of the notorious Haight-Ashbury district. I think it was here where I learned the most and the fastest, for within a few years it turned from a place where searching young people came to find the truth to a place where they came to hide from life. But in the first years I learned a great deal, and my age and experience help a lot of others. I had a large apartment, and I made it a home for those who had none. Thus, I met all sorts during that 3 years period. Now I am 50, and I am working in an entirely different world of people, but I think the end results are much the same. Sincerely, Justin. End of chapter 3.